Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about using technology to protect your home today on the show. And our guest back with us once again, Beth D'Angelo. She's a senior IT specialist in UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT. So as we talk with Beth, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about home security technology? Also love to hear your experiences with security systems. Have they helped? What problems have you had with them? Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Beth D'Angelo, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be back. It's been a while.
It has been. Let's talk about some of the latest things technology can do to protect our homes. What are some of them?
Well, a lot of the technologies that are out now have been around for a while. They're just now becoming more connected to each other and then more responsive to giving you information in the moment that things are happening. So, home security systems, video surveillance systems, things like that have been around for decades, but we're getting much more cost-effective security systems coming out now with very easy-to-use user setups where you can basically have an app on your phone that allows you to control the various devices on your home remotely or from within your home. So a lot of the improvements are smaller systems, less expensive, easier to do yourself rather than needing to hire a company to come and do it for you, and then more accessible with the devices that you currently use, like your phone.
So do they work pretty well? How do they figure into a smart house, kind of?
Yeah, well, a smart house is kind of a nebulous word. You know, there's not a lot of definition around it. What I think of when I hear a smart home is a home that is wired to the internet with various devices that control certain aspects of your home, whether it's the environmental controls of your house, door security, so opening and closing doors and locks, monitoring your garage door, and then you have the video surveillance systems that are built on top of that that allow you to wire up cameras, and certain actions that happen within your home can then trigger certain actions within your video camera system so you can see what's going on even if you're not there.
So it's probably, you know, I would love to know actually how it all works, artificial intelligence, in terms of the home security. It may be very complicated, but in a way, but easy for us to use from the sound of it.
Yeah, it's really the barrier to entry using these systems has come way down, where you don't need to be an electronics expert to put some cameras up in your home. There are some consumer-grade products that you can buy that are basically a package that all of the components that you need to wire up your home come in one box, and they walk you through with instructions on how to set it up and how to utilize the system. And then there are also services that you can where you can pay for professionals to come in and set up a full smart home system that is much more complex that is then managed for you for a monthly fee.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of fee, what are the costs of, let's say, of a do-it-yourself kind of system versus the fee ones?
If you're looking at a do-it-yourself system, some of the ones that are pretty highly recommended, at least in my experience, the Ring alarm system. So I'm sure a lot of folks have heard of or seen Ring doorbells. This is a doorbell system that has a small camera attached to it that connects into your home through your existing power supply. And you can basically, anytime your doorbell is rung or there is motion in front of that camera, it'll record for a certain amount of time and it'll store those clips in a cloud-based application that you can reach from your cell phone. So the Ring alarm works that way. There are a couple other services that, like Simply Safe is another one where you can either set it up yourself or you can pay them to come in and do it. And various companies offer a DIY or a professional setup package. You can choose between those. So the ones you've probably heard of for years, like ADT, which is a really well-known security company, that's mainly a professional installation where you pay them to come in and set it up for you, and then you pay a monthly fee. But some of these others that have come into the market, like SimpliSafe and Ring, are much more homeowner-driven.
Yeah. And I have no idea. I'll be honest and say I don't have that system. So here's a note to all the criminals who want to come over. Come on over to my place, I guess. Oh, my goodness. What's the cost on something like this?
Yeah, if you're looking at one of the professionally managed setups, they start around $400 to $500 for the initial setup, and then you pay usually around $20 to $30 a month for the management of it. So that gets you, you know, if an alarm is signaled, it relays to the company, and they check to see if you actually need emergency services contacted. So it's a little bit more robust than just the DIY packages. But if you want like a Ring doorbell setup, you can get started for $200 to buy a base model setup and put it together yourself without having to pay any monthly fee then.
So $200 isn't bad.
Not too bad for what you think about what you're getting, especially if you're somebody who's not home often. You know, if you travel frequently or you're gone for long periods of time during the day for work, I know that having something like a system that lets you know when any activity is happening around your home so that you can monitor it just to make sure, you know, a package shows up and you don't want it sitting out on your porch. You can phone your neighbor and say, hey, can you go grab that for me? Or, you know, your dog gets out while you're gone. You want to know what's going on around your house. So it's really nice for peace of mind.
Yeah, I could see that. And I'm thinking, too, if let's say you're an elderly person and you live alone, to be able to see, like on the Ring alarm, to see who's out there.
Yeah, I think for anybody, not just an elderly person or someone who lives alone, but, you know, especially those folks who are a little bit more vulnerable living alone or folks who are elderly, just having that peace of mind and being able to see who's there. Not having to go to the door, you can, you know, if you're in your living room, you can check your phone and you can see, oh, this is just somebody trying to sell me something. I don't want to answer the door. You don't have to get up. You don't have to go answer it. You know, you've got kind of that peephole through the door right on your phone.
You know, I had a branch from across a tree across the street came across my power line and completely took out all my power, including knocking off the antenna and all the works from the side of the house. In other words, I had 5 days without any electricity, and I'm wondering what happens when the electricity is out on these.
Yeah, some of them have a battery operated, so there are some that aren't dependent on a power supply on your house. There are also like emergency power supply units that you can put in if you want to have some continuous operation of electricity for devices like this. Some of them run, you know, hardwired power to your house. Some of them run power over Ethernet. So there are various ways to power the devices, like a UPS or an uninterrupted power supply, which is like a battery backup. Could keep that going for a short period of time, depending on how much money you want to spend on a battery backup. But losing power is something you can't really compensate for unless you have some sort of backup form of power or you have a system that's only dependent on battery.
Yeah, this wired versus wireless, is one, do you think one's better than the other?
You know, it really depends on what you're looking to be able to do. The wireless ones are a lot simpler to set up. You don't have to put cabling in your house. You don't have to account for the distance that you can run with cables. They're less expensive now than the wired cameras are. So it's funny how the wireless have now come down in price to below where the wired stuff was a while back. So I've been going wireless with things like this. And the caveat with that being, if you're going to run everything wireless, it's especially important to make sure that you've got some firewall protection on your network and potentially set up a personal VPN, so that those devices on your network aren't vulnerable to people on the outside.
Yeah, I haven't heard much of it lately, but I can remember maybe it's months back, maybe it was a year back, where people were suddenly having people hack into their systems. And in one case, there was a video I saw of people actually talking to somebody's child in their bedroom.
Yeah, it's funny. It's not a new occurrence for that to happen. I remember when my kids were little, about 10, 15 years ago, they had the video monitor, baby monitors. And so it was just a little camera you put up in your baby's crib. And you had a little video monitor thing that you keep in the living room with you so you could take a look at your baby if they were fussing. And there was a big uproar about folks being able to hijack that signal and, you know, take a look at what's going on in someone's baby's room, which is really disturbing for any parent to think about.
Of course.
So, you know, that's been happening ever since we've sent any kind of video signals over the air or wire from inside our homes. So that's why it's really important to set up some sort of defense system at the perimeter of your home. That's really what that firewall and VPN can do, to make sure that any activity that's happening on the electronic network within your home isn't vulnerable to anyone on the outside.
And tracking systems, what are some of the personal and tracking systems that are available out there?
Well, they've got these now air tags that I'm sure you've heard a lot about, where it's like a little key ring chip that you can attach to anything that will essentially GPS locate wherever that tag is placed whenever it moves. And there's been quite a bit of controversy recently about people worried about stalking or, you know, folks following them based on their location if they hide a tag in someone's belongings. Now, there's supposed to be some technologies that actually inform you if a tag is located near your device. So say if you're an iPhone user and an AirTag is located near your device that you haven't registered with your device, your iPhone will tell you that. But if you're not an iPhone user, I'm not sure if Android has caught up with that yet. And there are also other companies now manufacturing AirTag-like systems that aren't as easily noticed by Apple's software for looking for them.
Mm. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Questions for her about home security systems, or maybe a comment about them, one way or the other, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. And of course, Beth's an IT specialist, so if you have other kinds of issues with your software or your computers, she's more than happy to help out there, too. So again, the number is 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert, our producer today, on-air producer, Jill Nadeau's our producer, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at home security today, and also answering other issues relating to technology within your home, with our guest Beth D'Angelo of the UW Division of Information Technology. Great to have her along. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Patrick and Madison, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I set up one of these systems about a year and a half, 2 years ago. It's wireless and runs on batteries, and I absolutely love it. We were overseas and able to, make sure that our mail was being picked up by our neighbor. There was a storm that came through, and we were able to see, you know, if there was any damage to the house or the neighborhood. And the thing I really love about the battery system is that even if the house loses power, the cameras still take pictures and video. And when the system comes back online in the house, everything gets downloaded. So, you don't really lose any coverage. I was a little bit concerned about battery recycling, but since Madison recycles lithium ion batteries, you know, the system, I really enjoy it. I really like it. It does give us great peace of mind.
Patrick, does it take, what kind of batteries does it take? Like A batteries, double A's?
Double A lithium ion. They say they last 2 years, and I found that they have. Actually, I guess I've had it up for almost 3 years now because I did replace batteries last year, and they did last 2 years. Even on cameras that were outside in the cold Wisconsin winter, I got a 2-year battery life. I was very surprised.
Well, thanks a lot for calling, Patrick. Appreciate it. Just a comment from you, Beth?
I think that's excellent that they've been able to extend the battery life significantly with using lithium ion batteries now. And being able to get a year to 2 years out of a battery in a camera that's outdoors, like you said, in the cold Wisconsin winter is pretty impressive to me, seeing where the technology came from 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah. Patrick, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Josh in Sparta, on to you now. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Larry. Your previous caller had a great point there with what I would call a supervised wireless system. They've come a long ways. What I always tell people is any security is good security. I am a security professional. But the wireless signals, what I just want everybody to know is, you know, if you've ever had a problem with, you know, everybody knows about streaming television services now and your television might be buffering. If you are doing something with what I would call health and safety, so smoke detectors or panic buttons or anything like that, carbon monoxide detectors, if you're really taking your security serious, you don't want your security to buffer. So if you want some real-time security, what you want is something that's supervised with a battery backup. You know, we don't want to rely on Wi-Fi, so a wire is always better.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Josh. Beth, you agree with that?
No, I agree. And in any kind of like a professional setting where if this was a system being set up for a business or for an area that was open to the public, certainly putting in any kind of redundancy within the system, like hardwire power, hardwire network, battery backup, things like that are really important, especially for something that would be considered a health and safety system like a video surveillance or a building monitoring. Within the home, if you are very serious about putting in a system that has redundancy built into it so that, you know, regardless of the power situation in the home or the network situation in the home, that you're always going to have that video recorded. The previous caller had mentioned that even if the power to the main system is cut, the cameras themselves record video locally. And then as the camera system comes back online, the video is then downloaded to it. Most systems now have memory built in directly to the cameras to record for an amount of time while the main system is offline. So that's one kind of good fail-safe for those systems.
Yeah. Josh, thanks again. Appreciate the call. Jim in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I got a four-family rental building that I would like to put some security cameras in at the near the public entrances. There's a front door, back door, and maybe some general exterior. And I was looking at, you know, big box stores sell them. Costco sells the system. I was thinking of doing a do-it-yourself type of thing. It would be great if I could have it internet connected so I could see it from a remote location or my phone, but I don't know that I will pay the extra money to put my own internet in just for the security system, because obviously the tenants have internet and I don't kind of want to, I don't really want to combine anything with any of them. But you have any suggestions on that installation, and is there any option that is remote monitoring that in a building like that that I could potentially consider?
What do you think, Beth?
Yeah, it wouldn't be with one of the services that you could really set up on your own. If you wanted to go with one of the companies that does professional installation and then monitoring for you, I think that's a possibility if you don't want to purchase internet specifically for that building just for your cameras. So I would look into one of the services like ADT or Vivint, where they do the security monitoring for a monthly fee and professional installation. Then you don't need a separate internet hookup for them to do their monitoring. But it's not going to give you the same like view to your cameras as you would with a DIY system that you set up just with a simple internet connection. So it may be worth it to you to put in a, get a broadband internet connection, run to the building so that you can view your cameras remotely and forego the monthly fees that it would charge to pay a professional monitoring service to do that for you. So you kind of have to weigh the pros and cons of both. But either way, you need something to relay that information to you, unless you're only going to record it to a local system, which is kind of the old DVR method where you're not viewing it real time, but it is recording to a local box that stores that video for later viewing.
Ah, okay. There you go, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Peter in Racine, on to you now. Hi, Peter.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks. Great information all the time. Want to ask, could you go over how to set up a personal VPN for these security systems? And I can take the answer offline. Thank you.
What do you think,
yeah,
Beth?
I won't go into great detail about the setup, but I will talk about a couple of VPN providers out there that are very simple to use. They've made it really accessible to the general public to trial specific VPNs to see how they work before you decide to sign up for a service. NordVPN, that's N-O-R-D, and then the letters VPN, all one word, is one that I've used. It's really simple. Basically, what it does is it makes it so that somebody out in the internet world can't actually see where in the physical world you are. So they can't connect you physically to a location on the internet. So it really helps separate your personal identity from whatever is going on out on the internet that you might be doing. People are less likely to be able to hijack your identities. They're less likely to be able to get information through you, phishing scams from you. It just really kind of protects your identity from the outside world for your whole network in your house.
Does it have any impact on your ability to use the system? Or, you know, if you're going somewhere and they say, well, we've got to have some information that maybe the VPN blocks?
You know, if depending on the VPN service, you know, where it masks your traffic. So what country does it make it look like your internet traffic is coming from? If that overlay is somewhere that some security service does, you know, block service from, then it could potentially cause a problem. But that's not something I would really worry about with any of the major providers.
Let's go to Richard in Fort Atkinson next. Hi, Richard. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just calling to see if your expert knows of any good home security camera systems that are not Wi-Fi dependent. We have high-speed internet, but we do not have Wi-Fi.
So you're looking for something that is hardwired cameras.
Right.
Yeah, and one of the kind of simpler DIY systems.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Ring has a hardwired option. I'm just going to do a really quick search to see if they have one. But most of the stuff now is really Wi-Fi dependent in the consumer market, at least for the lower cost options. Let's see. Generally, if you're going to do a wired system, you know, it's a professional company that comes in and puts the wiring in for you and sets that all up. I know it looks like Home Depot does have a few available. They're somewhat DIY. They look a little bit more complex. Night Owl looks like a service that has wired cameras that goes back to a DVR setup. So you have what's like a server in your house that records all the video locally to it. And you can connect a laptop or a computer up to that so that you can pull the video from it. Then you can keep everything off of a Wi-Fi network if you used a DVR setup like that.
All right. Does that help, Richard?
That helps a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call is 1-800-642-1100. 1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from Betty in Dodgeville. Hi, Betty.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a question. Bug tussle. What? Maybe this isn't the right show, but bug tussle versus light wire and all this internet connectivity in the rural areas. Aren't we getting broadband?
And you're in Dodgeville.
Yes. And we have terrible internet connections. Terrible.
Yeah. Beth, yeah, any response on that?
Yeah, I feel your pain. I definitely understand that, especially that became very apparent during the early lockdown in the pandemic, where a lot of folks were having to work from home and were not able to get fast enough internet access to be able to do that if they were in rural communities. So I know that Lightwire is an internet service. I think they're out of Evansville in Wisconsin. They do provide high-speed internet service to a lot of rural communities. I'm not sure about specific to your area, but that is one that has been growing pretty significantly recently for providing high-speed internet service to more rural areas.
Did you say Lightwire?
Not doing that yet.
I'm sorry. Did you say Lightwire or Livewire?
Yes. L-I-T-E.
Okay.
Wire, all one word.
All right. And then, I'm sorry, go ahead with what else you want.
Yeah, and there's also the option of, it may not be an option quite yet, but I've talked about this on previous shows. The Starlink satellite internet service is still something that is a possibility for rural communities for gaining high-speed satellite internet access, which is supposed to be much higher quality than previous satellite internet providers. That's something you just go to Starlink's website and you can sign up for either beta testing or I believe most areas are still on a waiting list for service.
I was in Door County this last weekend and I have some neighbors to my friends where I was staying. Had moved, I think, from Chicago to Door County and needed high-speed, fast internet for their business. And they were hooked up to Starlink, apparently with good success.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've heard of a few folks who have gotten access. I know a few people who were doing beta testing. And it sounds like it's hopefully not too good to be true.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope so. I don't know what they were paying for it or what they charge. Do you have any idea?
I think it's about $100 a month.
Oh.
And there's some initial setup fee for the access point.
So that's not bad, especially if you want to move to an area or live in an area and your business depends on it. That's a pretty cheap cost that you then turn around and write off on your taxes for business.
Yeah, it may be a different cost for business customers than it is for private users. But I know for the personal use, I think $100 a month was the last I saw.
Okay. Betty, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. So Lightwire or maybe Starlink, place for you to look. Jim and Camp Douglas, we're going to you now. Thank you for calling.
Okay, I'm interested in that EUFY, EUFY security system that's independent. It doesn't have to go through a provider. Can you tell me anything about that I might be interested in pursuing?
EUFY, EUFY.
This is new to me. I'm just looking at it right now. So EUFY camera. It does look like this is what I would call somewhat of a DVR setup. So you have a central box that you record to, and you have, it looks like the base is a four-camera setup where those all report back to a kind of a central server hub for recording and security management. So it looks like you can connect that security hub up either via an app or through your home computer to be able to control the recording settings and be able to retrieve that video. So it's a service that's all self-contained. So similar to what the old CCTV systems would be, but this is just more a digital version of what those old CCTV systems were.
And what did you notice a cost on those when you were looking?
It looks like their base model 4-camera kit is about $800. And they've got a 2-camera kit that is $550.
Okay. So if you want to go that way, it probably worth it could be worth the cost. Jim, thanks.
One thing I see on here that's really interesting is they have some solar powered cameras.
That would be
worried about battery life.
Yeah, if you're worried about battery life, for sure. Mm-hmm. Jim, thanks. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email to ideas@WPR.org. We've zeroed in on the home security systems, but we'll take other questions as well, software-related questions or technology-related questions, certainly. Again, it's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Always great to have her stop by and talk with us. Beth, what kinds of questions are you getting from now the students are back? What's the main software or technology question you're getting from them?
So, the start of the semester is always a big push for us, where the first probably 3-4 weeks is making sure everybody has access to all the things they need and, getting folks used to working within the kind of security boundaries of the university and making sure that we're not interfering with a lot of what's going on as far as campus communication, because it's a big there's a big batch of communication that happens this time of year that we want to make sure we're the signal and not the noise. So it's really just getting information in people's hands, making sure that they're forming good habits to start off the year. And making sure that they have all the support that they need in order to get a good start for the school year.
Yeah. Security is such an issue, when you've got these tens of thousands of people all in that same network. There's opportunities there if we're not careful for some real shenanigans to take place from outsiders.
Yeah, and I think we've found that our best defense, even with all of the technology that we work with, is our best defense is truly educating the folks who are using the services that we provide and giving them the information that they need in order to use those services responsibly and in a way that's not going to invite any nefarious activity. So there are a lot of things that people can do to protect themselves when they're online. And at Do It, where I work, it's a big responsibility of ours to educate our user populations about what they can do to protect themselves.
We're required to take a technology security test, and I just took mine this morning in honor of your arrival.
Just finished your security awareness training, Larry, for shame.
Well, it wasn't due for 2 more days, the deadline.
Okay.
The deadline was still 2 days away. So, I am proud to say that I'm a very smart person when it comes to technology, although I hardly believe it, but at least I know what I'm supposed to do.
Well, good. I'm glad you passed.
We'll be with flying colors on that one. Tom in Fitchburg, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Yeah, we're snowbirds. We leave for a few months every year to get away from the cold. And one of the things we do is set up our house so we can keep it about 45, 50 degrees, something like that, for obvious reasons. We've got a Wi-Fi set up whereby my wife can check the temperature here on her iPad. And it works marvelously until our internet provider here drops the signal. Sometimes the signal comes back by itself, sometimes it doesn't. Is there any way to sort of guarantee the signal won't be dropped other than, you know, make sure the equipment's in the best shape possible?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no way to guarantee that your internet service provider isn't going to have some sort of glitch and drop a signal to your house. But as far as what you can do to mitigate that is before you leave your house for a long period of time, I would run on your router, your internet router that comes into your house with your broadband access. I would run any software updates on it and firmware updates on that piece of hardware before you go to make sure it has all of the most current security patches applied to it. I would also do the same on your wireless access point. Make sure it has the most current security settings and security updates loaded onto it. That way, if your provider makes any changes while you're gone, you won't be so out of sync with their changes by the time you get back that there's some sort of a misconfiguration that causes your signal to drop. So it's really about trying to stay up to date before you go so you don't end up way out of step. There's a couple of things that you can do to help on your end.
So somebody might ask, how the heck do I update my router? Or the what do you
right.
have to
do? And unfortunately, I can't give you instructions because they're all different. But the best thing you can do is to look at the brand name and model number of your internet router and then go to Google that product, get a user manual for it. They will have step-by-step instructions on how to run any firmware updates or software updates on that piece of hardware.
Okay. I'm sure that question popped into many minds, including my own, as a matter of fact. Tom, thanks again. Appreciate it. Well, Greg in Middleton will give you a chance. Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thanks, Larry. We have TDS internet TV and stuff, and the signal is just wonderful. It's like 200-300 megabytes per second, but in certain spots in our house, it's much, much slower. I'm wondering if the router signal does not go through like a brick chimney or through concrete basement walls, or if there's a booster I could do, or if you have suggestions.
Yeah, it likely is that there's some feature within your home that is causing some electronic interference with the Wi-Fi signal. That could be anything from like architectural features of the house or appliances within the house. I know one thing that used to cause a lot of problems that I suppose a lot of people don't have anymore, but if you had a landline and the older 900 megahertz cordless phones would cause a lot of signal interruption for Wi-Fi signals. They used similar frequencies and it would cause a lot of packet loss. So it could be part of your home that's doing it. It could be something within the home. There's one thing that folks are now investing more in to cover their entire house with Wi-Fi. That's called mesh Wi-Fi, which basically weaves together multiple devices to provide a constant Wi-Fi signal within your house. Some places call it whole house Wi-Fi mesh. So that's a way to get coverage from one end of the home to the other, especially if you have, you know, not just your TVs, but your cell phones, your tablets, your doorbells, your video cameras, sometimes people have their refrigerator and their washing machine and their dryer all hooked up as devices on their network signal. If you've got a mesh Wi-Fi set up, then you're not causing bottlenecks with everybody connecting to the same router device at the same time.
Now, is there some physical thing that needs to be added, or how does it?
Yeah, they're called mesh Wi-Fi devices or mesh Wi-Fi systems. So it's like a multiple router system that spreads out through your house that is like you mentioned something called a booster. Those don't really exist in theory. They're just multiple wireless access points that have overlapping coverage that make that signal stronger in all parts of your home.
Okay. Greg, there you go. Take a look at that mesh Wi-Fi setup. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Beth D'Angelo, our guest today, senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We've been zeroing in a bit on home security systems, a technology update with Beth D'Angelo, IT specialist with the, she's the senior IT specialist with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Call in at 800-642-1234, email to ideas at WPR.org. John in Marshfield will give you a chance. Thanks for calling in, John.
Hi, Larry. Say, recently we've lost our ability to connect with the Internet through Wi-Fi. Our Apple phones and our computer have, there's no access. It doesn't even recognize our system. We do get a display that says LTE, and our signal for the cell phone is very weak. It's just one bar. I'm looking for some help on resolving that problem.
Hmm. So you have Wi-Fi, you have broadband internet coming to your home, but your devices aren't seeing that internet access available. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's it.
Yeah. It's probably something to do with either the router or the wireless access point. And sometimes those are the same box, the same machine. Sometimes they're two separate boxes, one connected to the other. But the place I would start, which is where I always start, and it might be frustrating to hear, is to turn it all off and turn it back on again. So if you can locate the router where your internet connection comes into your home, there should be a electronic router, little box there. And if that's the only piece of equipment that's connected, then that's the one you should power down and then power it back on. If there's two boxes, one's probably the router and the other is likely the wireless access point, I would reboot the router first and then the wireless access point second. After the routers come back up. Usually, I would say 95% of the time, issues like that are solved with a simple reboot of the equipment.
I'll give it a try.
All right. Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it. Yeah, sometimes the simple way turns out to be the best way.
Well, I know it's frustrating, but, you know, I hear myself say it all the time, though. Have you tried turning it off and turning it back on again?
Yeah.
Buy it a nickel for every time, right?
Absolutely. Michael in Madison will give you a chance now. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hey, good morning, guys. Hi, Beth. Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I've traveled a bunch, and I got a question on products that provide its own Wi-Fi source. Do they charge monthly, or do you buy the device and pay a yearly fee for that service, or how does it work? Have you heard anything, any products like that?
So it sounds to me like you're talking about a Wi-Fi hotspot or something where you could have Wi-Fi access regardless of where you go based on a cellular signal. Yeah, there's tons of them out there. If you go to Amazon and search for Wi-Fi hotspot, there's probably 50 different products. One that I know is pretty decent is called Brightspeed, B-R-I-G-H-T, Speed, all one word. That one gets pretty good reviews. But like I said, there are at least, you know, from the major providers, you've got Netgear, who they make all different kinds of networking equipment from home wireless stuff all the way up to server gear. So Netgear is a good reputable company, but several other manufacturers as well. And generally, you pay a monthly fee for that hotspot access. It's not terribly expensive. I think probably along the $30 to $50 a month range, which is kind of similar to what you would pay for home internet service. It's generally not going to be as fast as your broadband internet service because it is using a cell phone signal. So it's going to be using a 5G or 4G LTE signal to give you that internet access. So it'll be similar to what you would get when you're traveling on your cell phone using the internet on your phone.
All right. Brightspeed, right? Is the one that one of the ones you mentioned, correct?
Brightspeed, yes.
Yeah. All right. Michael, thank you. Appreciate it. Maureen in Manitowoc, on to you now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. I'm enjoying your program, and I want to give a shout out for Starlink. My husband and I are in the country, so we don't get any city Wi-Fi signals. We had a broadband signal, and I was constantly having to call the people, and they were telling me to reboot my router and on and on and on. And we got Starlink, and there's been no problem whatsoever. It did cost a hefty amount. I believe it was $700 for the hardware or for the stuff up on the roof, but that is something we purchased. So if we were to move or to go someplace else, we could bring it along. We love it. As for the man who said that he keeps getting dropped from his signals, I found out that my utility company had a new remote meter out in the attached to my house, and it was overriding my Wi-Fi, and so I was getting dropped before I got Starlink.
The monthly fee, Maureen, what's the range on the monthly fee for you guys?
It is about $100, and well worth it.
Yeah, there you go. Beth, a comment?
No, it's great to hear that it's now actually becoming more available to the public. It's something I've been talking about on your show, Larry, for probably a year or a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, waiting for it to be available in more locations and for them to onboard more customers. And I know they're trying to take a cautious approach to growth so that they're not onboarding too many people at one time and then diluting the signal for the folks who have already onboarded. So I appreciate seeing a company do that where they're not trying to grow at such a rate where they're only going after new business rather than providing a good service to their existing customers. So far what I'm hearing is positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Maureen, thanks a lot. Really appreciate that comment. Brooke in Eau Claire, your turn now. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for taking it. So I'm wondering if you guys happen to have any suggestions. We just got a new router. It's now, I believe, a 5G. We did have a 2.4. We were having problems with our routers, but now our security system that I bought through a door cam is now basically obsolete. It won't connect to that 5G router.
Oh.
Do you guys have any suggestions on how we can get our $170 security camera to now work with our new router?
Oh.
Yeah, I've heard of this happening. So there are a lot of routers are dual mode where they will allow you to send a signal through it in the 5 gigahertz or the 2.9 gigahertz, because older systems use that that lower frequency transmission. So I would take a look at the router and see if it has a dual mode that you can enable that will broadcast in both frequency ranges. If you don't, then I'm unfortunately going to tell you that that security system is not going to be compatible with that router.
So Brooke would need to buy a new router, probably.
Or a new security system, one or the other.
Whichever is cheaper. Huh?
Whichever is cheapest, right?
Brooke, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but maybe you're lucky. Maybe you're lucky.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great day.
Good luck, Brooke. Thank you.
Roger in Grantsburg. Hello.
Hey, Larry, how are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I was just listening, and one of the callers had called in and said they're having Wi-Fi signal issues in their house. We've been fighting it for years, and it's like trying to figure out why from one end to the other. We've tried putting the booster or whatever, you know, a signal booster, and it's like it's not happening. Well, then you just said that 900 megahertz older cordless phones will mess it up. Which phones aren't they all 900, or what's the how do you know? And then the other guy just said now something about the electric service with the signal being messed up, because we just got new meters put in and they're on Wi-Fi. I would assume nobody comes and reads a meter.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm sure they're called in And now is that the meter is like probably 30 feet from where the 40 feet from where the DSL comes in.
Okay. Beth, what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't heard much about power meters causing electrical interference with Wi-Fi signals, but there's certainly a possibility if that power meter is using a different or if a similar frequency to broadcast its data. So I wouldn't rule it out. But what I would recommend, like you mentioned that you had tried a signal booster for your Wi-Fi, I would definitely look into one of these mesh Wi-Fi systems. They certainly have proven to be able to provide more coverage across a larger area within your building or within your house.
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea. And Beth's got lots more to tell us, and she'll be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Beth D'Angelo. I'm Larry Mueller. Talking technology on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Our guest is Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Hope you'll join in. Are you having problems with your smartphone or your computer? What about security issues? Or maybe you've got something good to say about your security issues. Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Open lines will get you on pretty quickly here. Let's go to Dean in Mount Horeb. Hi, Dean.
Hi. Touch on a couple subjects you've been talking about. One is high-speed access. I also live out in the country and was always struggling. We had DSL, but we were kind of at the end of the line, and we were lucky to get 2 or 3 megs of speed out of it, plus it was always dropping off. And I was considering Starlink, but they have a pretty long waiting list, plus the cost. And now, T-Mobile and Verizon have come out with wireless, or rather with internet based on their wireless signal. And I have T-Mobile. I'm very satisfied with it. So as long as you're in an area that gets cell phone coverage, I mean, it's pretty stable. The speeds are good. They're up over about 100, and it's worked well for me. And then in regards to mesh routers, we have a two-story home plus a finished basement. My office is in the basement. That's where the router is. And I was always kind of struggling with the same thing, coverage. And I got a mesh router, very simple. I mean, there's a number of different ones out there. I got the Eero from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Like 5 minutes to install it, and coverage throughout the home, and it's been very good. So, on those two subjects, I've been satisfied with my the solutions I had with my problems.
Dean, thanks a lot for calling. A comment, Beth?
Yeah, Dean, thanks for that. Especially the T-Mobile, hearing that they're it sounds like you've got a wireless setup from them, like a hotspot, and that it's working well when you're in a T-Mobile wireless coverage area. That's something I'll add to my list for recommending to people then when they're looking for that type of coverage out in the rural communities to have internet access. So thanks for the follow-up on that.
Yeah, thank you, Dean. Appreciate that very much. Jim in Oregon, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really don't have a question. I'm a process server, so I serve legal papers all over the state. And one doorbell I did ring, the doorbell answered and said, "Excuse me, I'm cleaning my shotgun in the basement. It's going to take me a minute to get upstairs. What do you want?" I thought that was kind of funny.
For a second, I thought you were going to try to serve me on air here. But that's not the case.
Oh my goodness. So there is, so that's a recorded device a recording that automatically speaks, Beth? Is there that sort of thing available?
No, there's actually the Ring doorbell systems have a voice option so that if somebody hits your doorbell, they can pull up a video signal and see you standing out on their front porch, and then they can actually talk to you and listen to you through the microphone and the speaker that's on the device. So there's two-way communication built into those Ring doorbells that allows you to talk to the person who's standing on your front porch and then have them answer back as well, similar to an intercom.
Gotcha.
It also records that.
Jim, thanks again. Appreciate it. That's an interesting way to comment to somebody when they come to your door. Linda in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm also a snowbird, and my husband and I had the same problem with the power going out and our Wi-Fi not rebooting. And we seem to have resolved it for last winter. It was suggested that we buy a router modem combined unit. And apparently the problem is that they both need to reboot simultaneously. And when you have them both in one piece of equipment, they do that.
Hmm.
Then you don't lose, you lose the Wi-Fi for the time that the power is out. But when the systems reboot, it comes back up.
It comes back up.
It's worked well for us.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. If your wireless access point and your router is in the same box, when that reboots, those two functions are going to come up in the proper order for things to start working again on its own without you having to do anything. But if you have two separate boxes, one is your router and one is your wireless access point, and the power drops on both of those at the same time, and they both come back online at the same time, then your router and your wireless access point may not have the timing to be able to connect to each other in that reboot process because they're two separate boxes. So yeah, having those both in the same machine, so a router that's also your wireless access point, could eliminate that synchronization issue between them when they're rebooted.
Yeah. Linda, thanks a lot.
Battery backup system on your router and your wireless access point will keep it from being affected by a power outage. So if you had a battery backup, what I call a UPS, or an uninterruptible power supply, will then continue power on those devices so that they don't go offline during a power outage.
Oh, so Linda could hook something like that up to her combo box?
Yep, and they're actually relatively inexpensive, small battery backup systems that give you a couple of hours worth of power just to, a small router and access point, $100 to $150 to purchase one of those.
Hmm. Linda, do you have that?
I don't think so. We might, but
not another knowledge. Thing you could do if you wanted some assurance that you wouldn't lose your internet connection when you're not home if the power does go out.
It's called a UPS. Is that what you said?
UPS, yeah. Uninterruptible power supply. It's basically a battery backup system.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Sure. Wide open line, so you can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Beth, were you going to say something and I went and interrupted you?
No, I think I was just commenting under my breath how hard it is to say the word uninterruptible.
Oh, boy. I tell you. So we haven't had any questions today about phones, I don't think, or smartphones. That surprises me a little bit. We usually get something. What's the status now of the latest Apple phone and how it relates to the other versions, the other companies' phones? Apple seems to be way ahead of everybody else in terms of sales, at least.
Yeah, people really seem to, it's not an issue that people have a lot of gray area on. Either they love Apple products or they hate them. There isn't a lot of indifference there. And my contention has always been that Apple makes its user interface just stupid easy. And that's a good thing for me because I don't want to have to think about how to use my phone when I'm using my phone. I just want it to work. And Apple is really pretty good at making these user interfaces that are just intuitive There's not a lot that you have to learn in order to be able to use them fairly quickly, whereas a lot of the Android devices or Google Play devices are a little bit more complicated. They're not quite as user-friendly, not quite as intuitive, but oftentimes do have more features or, configuration ability to them. So they're not as locked down as Apple's products are, where Apple makes everything very proprietary, very Apple-based, not always compatible with other things.
Yep, I like my Apple. Peggy in Casco, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a problem. I've owned this house for 3 years. I have Verizon through my son's account, and I literally have to walk all over the house, depending on who I'm calling, to find a good reception. What can I do?
So it could be, it could be your phone that isn't getting good reception, or it could be the wireless provider or the cell phone provider, like you said, Verizon. So the one thing you can do to test out to see what your signal strength should be where you're at is to go onto Verizon's website and to take a look at their coverage area to see if there's any gaps in coverage in your location. So if you go out to Verizon.com, they have coverage maps that will show you if they have known areas that aren't covered. And that'll tell you that it's probably a good idea to change your phone provider then if they're not going to be providing coverage in your area. But it also could be the device that you're using. If you have an older phone, especially one that hasn't been updated recently, it may be trying to use an older cell phone protocol to connect to the tower that's near you and not doing a very good job at it. So running any updates on your phone to make sure it's got the latest security updates and the latest version of the operating system on the phone. Those are both things that are going to help improve your ability to keep a signal. If the phone is too old to update, then it might be time to get a new one if that's causing the problem. But a way you can test that is if you have friends or family who have different device types than yours, come over and see what kind of signal they're able to get in your house. See if there's a difference between what they see on their device and what you see on yours.
Yeah, have your son come over with his phone.
No, I've done everything you've suggested. And I'm standing right outside the house right now, and you're coming in clear,
Yeah.
But I walk in the house, and if I go to my left in the kitchen, I break up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and sometimes, unfortunately, the way your house is built, depending on the materials it's built with, the age of the home, things like that, there could be electronic frequency interference within the home that's causing it. But usually it's not the building itself that's causing the problem. It's either the device you're using to connect or the service isn't providing good enough coverage in that area to really get into your home. And I don't know of any devices that allow you to, like, really boost your cell phone signal that exists these days.
No. I'd go to Verizon as Beth suggested and take a look at the coverage area. Verizon's pretty good coverage across our state, at least.
Yeah, well, it may benefit to go to another service provider and ask them for a trial to see if you can test the coverage area in your home with a different service provider to see if maybe you get a better signal through someone else.
Yeah.
I know they have return periods. You know, you can go to another provider, get a phone and a plan, and some of them give you 48 hours, some of them give you up to a week, and if it's not working for you, you can return it, and they'll return your money.
Hmm.
Peggy, so a good way to test out if you get a better signal with another company before you actually, like, commit.
Yeah, Peggy, good luck. Thank you. Marlene in Nakusa, your turn. Hi, Marlene.
Yes, thank you. We are shortly going to be hooked up to the internet, the fiber optic internet for high-speed broadband. I need to know whether I should opt for 150, 250, or 400 Mbps.
Well, a good way to understand what those mean is to think about what you can do with it. So when I talk to folks about their, you know, how much of an internet signal they need, I think in terms of what are you doing with it? So most people are streaming video, right? That's the most kind of bandwidth intensive thing they would likely do. And in order to stream video without any buffering, meaning the signal stops and then you have to wait for it to start again, you need about 6 megabytes per second of data. So they're offering at their base level 150 megabytes. So it sounds to me like the 150 megabytes would be more than ample to provide you with all of the bandwidth you would need to do all of the things.
Hmm. All right. There you go, Marlene. Thank you. Wade in Alma Center, your turn. Hi, Wade.
Hello. I heard a few minutes ago, I heard you talking about UPS, those uninterruptible power supplies. And I've got two of those, actually, that are getting old, and they don't seem to have much power left in them at all. And I'm wondering if they're replaceable. I mean, I know that I can buy new ones, but is there a way to recycle those things? I mean, that's a big chunk of battery that's sitting around that I'd like to see recycled.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in order to dispose of those batteries, usually you have to take them to a recycling center. I know a lot of the big box electronic stores do recycling programs of old equipment. They're also, depending on what city or county you're in, they're generally municipal dump sites or pickup locations for recycling batteries like that. You can replace the batteries on a UPS with a new one, but often it's not really cost effective to do so. It generally would cost about as much as it would to buy a new one in general. So, but as far as you've got old ones, they do age out. Batteries do eventually acquire dead spots in them when they're used over time. Also, when they sit, they acquire dead spots too. So eventually they're going to age out and you'll have to replace them.
Yeah. Wade, there you go. Thank you so much. Josie at Mequon, hi. Or is it Jose? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, it's Jose. Yeah. I've been in the my home security system from my whole life has been pretty archaic, which consists of door locks and peepholes. And while they can't be hacked and they require a little additional maintenance and don't emit any greenhouse gases once they're installed, I'm just trying to understand what the cost-benefit ratio would be for using one of these more modern technologies. And I'm wondering if you install one of these home security systems that you've been talking about, how much of a discount do I get on my homeowner's insurance, either as a percentage or as dollars and cents?
Hmm.
You know, that's a good question. I hadn't really looked into what the discount for having a home security system would be with regards to your homeowner's insurance, but likely there is some sort of percentage that you would get in discount for your homeowner's policy if you have a somewhat robust security system within your house, you're mitigating risk. So I would definitely check with your homeowner's insurance provider to see if they have any specifics on that. And as far as, moving up to a DIY system, what the benefits are of putting one of these in versus, the older, just having door locks and peepholes. Really, it's peace of mind, especially if you're not in the home and you want to be able to monitor what's happening to your house when you're not there. I think of it in terms of I have children who are teenage children, and if I'm not home and they are, I sometimes would like to know what's going on. So it makes me feel better if I need to leave the house and have my kids here on their own to be able to check in on things, or if someone does come to the house that I can actually see who that is and let them know if they should let that person in or not. I would think for anyone who lives alone, it might provide some peace of mind that if someone comes to your house late at night, that you don't have to go to the door to answer it. You can see who that is and kind of eliminate some of that anxiety. So I think there are a lot of benefits to having the visibility and the remote capabilities that the new system provide.
Jose, thank you so much for calling. Bill in Oregon emailed us and says, when you contract with a Panama-based VPN provider, you're entering into a good faith relationship with an entity that has no oversight and no enforceable obligations whatsoever. They advertise the pros of this positioning, but it also creates the opportunity for bad actors to operate on a truly epic level. Has this concerned you? If so, how do you get past it?
So I think the person is referencing NordVPN, the VPN provider that I was talking about earlier for personal VPN service. What they do is they actually mask your address and make it look like your internet signal is coming from Panama. So they use a Panama-based addressing system to basically obscure your position in the world when you're using the internet. But using any kind of an offshore cloud services provider does open you up to vulnerabilities if that service provider isn't following regulations that are required of a company that was based in, say, the United States. However, if that company wants to do business with consumers within the United States and Europe, they're required to follow some very stringent guidelines on security. So things like, NordVPN wants to do business with customers in Europe, they have to follow all the European standards for digital security. The same for if they want to do business with U.S. customers. So even though they're not based in the U.S., they're still required to follow those same security standards.
Roger in West Bend, what's on your mind?
I was wondering if you can set the speaker to default on an iPhone 8.
So that it automatically comes on?
Right.
Yeah.
If I can set the what?
The speaker. So the speaker phone, instead of pushing the button.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way to set the speaker as your default on an iPhone. I don't think you can do that on any iPhone, regardless of the model number. I think it automatically is going to come into the earpiece until you hit that speaker button. There may be something in the settings under the phone option, but I'm not sure with an iPhone 8, with something that old, that it would give you that ability.
I don't think I have
it. Anywhere, it would be in the settings under the phone option.
Yeah, I don't think I even have it, and I've got the latest version.
Yeah, I don't think that is something that you can. Yeah, it doesn't look like you can see the option even on the latest iOS. So, unfortunately, no, it doesn't go directly to speaker.
Yeah, would be kind of handy though.
Definitely would. It's funny because it'll automatically go to a Bluetooth device. If your Bluetooth device is connected, it'll do that automatically, but it won't automatically go to the speaker.
Maybe we should be all sending a letter or an email to them and saying, hey, why can't we get this default? Maybe you should do that, Roger. I'm sure they must have thought of it.
Most companies, Apple included, have a voice of the customer site where you can go and give them not a piece of your mind, but suggestions for improvements to their service or their product. So I would maybe go out to Apple's website and go to their voice of the customer.
Yeah.
Make it known that this is something you'd like to see. And the more people who make the same request, the higher on their priority list those features go.
There you go, Roger. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Beth, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks again for having me, Larry. Appreciate it.
Lots of fun. Beth DeAngelo, Senior IT Specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Tomorrow, we have a couple of urologists talking about kidney stones and prostate cancer, how to make you more healthy. And then there's a doctor who does CPR training over text. That's tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us.